Today's show is sponsored by Fender Guitars.
What can I say about Fender?
Hopefully the guitar just does the talking. You can overlook what I'm saying because it's pointless. Nihilist Fender ads. Play Fender. Or don't. It doesn't matter. Play Fender because one day every atom in existence will be spread out so far, entropy is impossible. This nihilism is like so not me. Today I'm talking with one of my favorite contemporary songwriters, Mr. David Bazan. He's put out records under his own name, just Bazan. He's put out records under the name Pedro the Lion, Headphones, Low Tom. He collaborates kind of a lot. His sensibilities fit in with the kind of music that I like doing. Guitar-based kind of rock, I guess. So this is probably one of the last videos I did with my older equipment. My pre-Father's Day camera. Thanks, kids. I could probably have a weekly conversation with him and not run out of stuff. We had this conversation early on into the quarantine times, and it was still the Wild West out there with streaming. I guess it's kind of still the Wild West out there with streaming. No one's really kind of figured out a perfect solution. My conversation with David Bazan happened May 12th, 2020. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on a sec. I got it. How about that?
Hi, Jim.
Hey, here I am. I forgot I had my Bill Gates conspiracy piece of tape over my...
As you should.
My camera there.
I wonder if there's a way that I can simultaneously record the... What's coming off of my...
Not probably if you're accessing the camera for Zoom.
That's probably right.
It's like the two at the same time. It's surprisingly very difficult to record in-app audio and video when you're doing a conference call of any kind.
Yeah, to do it well, it seems almost impossible.
That's going to be my new joke with like music journalists when they ask me about pre-stage rituals.
Right.
I'm going to say, I love to troubleshoot internal app audio right before we go on. It gets me pumped up to
rock.
That's
really it.
Yeah.
Oh, golly. Have you guys messed with any kind of streaming stuff?
I've done a couple of those things, and it's like, you get done with a song, and it's like,
there's no feedback.
I guess I'm killing.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess I'm killing. I'll just go ahead and believe that I'm killing right now. Like, you should get it's like a sound effects button to step on that just does like stadium noise.
It would be awesome. There is a Pavlovian thing that we are expecting, you know.
Yeah. It's kind of like playing in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
When everything just shuts down and it's just dead quiet and like people are very respectfully waiting for the next thing that you'll do, but it's kind of unnerving how quiet it is.
I did a show that I felt like that in Switzerland one time, and it felt like people were mad at me the way that they were sitting there, like they were just fuming silently, irritated.
Right.
And I get off the stage and the promoter says they loved it. Like they were freaking out. And I just was like, man, the nuances of what that means in you guys' culture are just completely lost on me. It just seemed like they hated my guts, and that has more to do with maybe my insecurity. And
yeah, it's funny where you end up taking that.
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of like when singers, or when it's usually a singer,
singers. Yeah,
somebody like storm off stage because it's not going their way.
Yeah,
where and if you're in the audience, you have no idea what this is all about, but like. Yeah. They've chosen to take that in their head and turn it into like the worst thing that has ever happened in their entire life and what a victim they are, and I'm out.
Yeah. It's funny. I remember seeing, I think it was you guys in Atlantic City, and there was like when we were on tour with you guys, and there was a moment where Denny somehow the soundboard malfunctioned and the house music started blaring, like, and the last two songs of your guys' original like set, and it, like the board like crashed or something, and it and then you guys just like left the stage and you came back and did the thing, and it was chaos and for a moment. And afterward, I told the guys, like, hey, steer clear of the Jimmy Eat World guys, because that was pretty rough. And and I stepped out of the green room, and you two or three of you guys were standing there, and it was just like, oh, hey, guys. And you guys were unfazed, just like, that was weird.
Yeah.
And that was neat. I liked that.
We did a gig in Manchester where we had, like, a mobile truck. It was doing a recording of the show,
yeah.
And after the gig, you could actually buy a CD of the show. But it was a gig like where maybe a couple of seconds into Sweetness, and the power to the club goes out.
Oh man!
But not the power to the recording truck. So you hear like all the sound goes away, except you hear Zach's live drums happening in the room, and then this the crowd knows Mm-hmm. You know, it, like there's like a minute or two, and then you hear the crowd go kind of nuts when the power comes back on, and that you hear me say, "All right, let's do this. All right, verse one." So we start again, and then the power goes out again, and it's just like, "Oh!" but what's so rad is like this. It's the funniest recording ever. Like it's on CD.
That's like this moment. That's amazing.
That's a story that you'll have forever. The shows that like, yeah, that was good.
The
end of story,
you know,
end of story. Yeah, but like, I was at the show where that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely true. I do like malfunctions being turned into like saves the moment kind of, those are my favorite when everything goes to hell. And then all of a sudden you're on the edge of the stage with an acoustic guitar, just like, you know, doing like one, the performer, whatever, just whatever, however you can make it go.
Yeah. You got to plan one of those into your set, make it like a reoccurring bit. So has this become like a sort of a new gathering stage for you? Like, you know, we'll be on tour and it's really hard for me to be writing on tour. Like I'm all about execution. Usually we've, kind of tried to take on some sort of new element for that particular tour, whether it's like a couple new songs or some wacky production thing we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about that. And I'm thinking about like singing and not losing my voice and getting enough sleep and all that. Do you have set phases like that where it's like, I'm all about this right now.
Right. I have, there are, you know, there are album cycles and there are the deadlines for records that are either kind of manufactured or driven by like, we gotta put this out everybody's year, or, you know, just the timing of that stuff has always been a factor. But until this season, until September, I've basically toured every 6 weeks, like 6 weeks on, 6 weeks off for like, you know, certainly since 2010. And then before that, it might've been a little thinner, but it was, you know, two or three big ones a year. And I just have never been in the position to be able to take a year off from touring or to go in that sort of like, now it's album cycle, now it's touring. You know, there's so many times where I'm writing and demoing in the van on tour when, you know, one time I remember I was working on the Headphones record. We had some time and everybody went in and watched Ocean's 12 in the movie theater. And I was in the van in the parking lot, just like writing headphone songs.
Yeah.
while they were in there. And so this time for me has allowed me more space than I've ever had to, I don't know, to have a process that wasn't so frantic. And that's been amazing. Though right before I started it, I ran into some, I was working on a record, the next Pedro record. And, in December, I stopped work on it because I ran into some like writing blocks, some mental blocks that I was having, where I would have the idea for what I wanted to do, and then I was afraid for various reasons to actually do it all the way. And so I was looking for a way to sort of mostly do it, but I was concerned about people's feelings in my life, and not free to really explore those things, and not even free to explore my own interior about it enough to make the choice of what to include and not. So I gave myself till August to start up again this coming August, and that I was going to be working through all of these sort of psychological whatever. And since this thing has begun, I've done a lot of that work, and now all of a sudden the spigot got turned back on. My body was like, all right, good job. Like, here's some of the things that you were too scared to feel or whatever. So the downtime has been amazing for me, but also I went into it without the pressure of feeling like I had to write. I was giving myself till the end of the summer to be ready again. And then the other part of it that for me comes into play, and I don't know when you're on tour if it's this way, but is part of the gathering process just fooling around on the guitar, like kind of aimlessly? Because I've been doing more of that. And it's seeded a lot of ideas that I just play, messing around.
Yeah, but for me, I'll gather, meaning like I'll just write down anything that kind of seems interesting. It's like journaling. You're writing for maybe, depending on your inspiration or your mood at that time, you're writing for potentially a really long time, but none of it is for the purpose of songs.
Right. Mine it later for you. Yeah. Go back and look and see what jumps out.
Is that because that's the main point for me of journaling anything, is that later I can mine this for whatever. But at the time, yeah, I'm able to just, divorce myself of expectations and just go. That's what I wish I could channel into lyric writing. Like, I know what my hangups are.
Yeah.
But yet when I'm in the middle of it, it's hard to confront that. It's hard to like mentally talk myself out of like what I know is happening.
I wonder about that myself. Is there a way that I can just like, what is it that is stopping me from doing that? And it's my expectation, I guess, of rejection or people hearing it and misunderstanding or thinking I'm a fool or something. And that's kind of what I was trying to get over when I was stopped making the record, is I'm not trying to hurt anybody. Like, I just am trying to express myself. Or I don't know how to say it, but where do you think that comes from? Or when you do lock horns with it, do you imagine what it'd be like to be free? And what do the obstacles seem to be there?
Man, I think we're both sort of in the same spot with this, with the blocks, and how do you overcome it? So far, everyone I've talked to it's the same for everybody, like everyone has, everyone experiences the same kind of crippling self-doubt.
Yeah.
Maybe I think that's sort of a sign of progress too. Like, if you're experiencing crippling self-doubt, I think you're on the right track. you gotta sort of check yourself and remember, wait a minute, I want to destroy everything. That means I'm on the right path here.
It means you're taking a risk. You're in that place of risk. I was emailing with somebody, and they're a writer, books and columns and things, but they also do songwriting. We were talking about what a huge risk, and you were talking about it earlier too, something about singing the final product and how personal and vulnerable that is, even with a band, but when you're demoing or you're hearing it back without all of the layers of music. But there's such a huge risk involved in being honest about your feelings in song, however that might come out for each individual artist personally. But that self-doubt to me means that you're having the opportunity to take a risk and to take more risks. And that's scary and cool. But like you said, it's an indication you're doing something right if you're having crippling self-doubt.
Yeah. I think there's sort of two things to unpack with that. I think that when you are experiencing those sort of fears, you're right where you're supposed to be. Yeah. Because if think about like, if you were able just to cruise through something and it was easy, how good would that be?
It might not be great.
It might not be great. I mean, I could cruise through like 20 songs right now and I can guarantee you not many of them would be great. So it's like, maybe that is a sign. Maybe like the struggle is a sign that like, okay, I'm on the path of something of value here, because it's not totally easy. Like, I know that I'm going to grow from this.
Yep.
Because I'm facing a challenge. It's like, musically, you can make an analogy. You know, I'm trying something a little bit harder than my technical ability right now. I got to practice more at this. I got to play this a couple of times. I mean, you remember what that's like. And when you get over that, then you're better for it. Maybe like taking on a theme that feels uncomfortable is sort of the same way.
Yeah, it's like a riff that you can't quite play, but you just got to woodshed it. And when it's a riff that you can't play, it's easier to wrap your head around. It's like a bicycle trick or something, you know, that it doesn't have, there is emotions involved in it, but it, you can focus on the technical aspect. But when it's a, when it's a theme, it's harder to recognize it as a, well, even talking about it, I feel like, am I talking about this in a way that's too sanitary? Like, am I belittling this magical sort of spiritual thing that is the, but music, all music is that same way. Lyrics aside, and lyrics are just something that I think are the tip of the spear in a lot of music. And so that's what gets judged the most. That's the entry point for the song for, well, everybody's different, but for me, lyrics are the entry point of the song. And so that's why I'm so self-conscious about them and want them to be so, whatever my standard is.
That's the thing is like, you got like, what's the standard here? It's yours. Yeah,
it's yours.
Who's to really judge if what you've come up with works or not? Like you.
It's you. Yeah.
It's you.
And being comfortable with your verdict, despite other people's verdict being different, is, I think, what is the goal. I was walking through the woods today, and I was listening to, I'm preparing for a live stream tomorrow, and I was listening to the most recent Pedro record. And when I hear it, and I think of the process of making it and what prompted me to make the record, I just think you did it. You know, do people think that it's brilliant, or do people think that it's dot, dot, dot? And then I become an insecure dickhead and went, but if I'm just in the woods by myself, listening to it as my like 10-year-old self who needed some parenting, you know, I'm like, fuck yeah, man. Like, you did it. Like, and I'm trying to live on by my verdict, like we're talking about, as opposed to what do other people think about it. And that's a fundamental thing. I feel silly for being this old of a person and being that insecure, but it's part of the process.
No, man, like, what you can control and what is out of your control is a lifelong thing. Every day is new. Yeah. Every day is new, and it's coming in. It's like a stream, and like there's one conveyor belt you like, can I control this? No. Can I control this? No. Can I control this? No. You might miss some. And it goes and jams up the machinery on the way back behind you.
It does,
Other people's opinions about your work is one of those things you can't control. It's like, I can't do anything. I mean, I forget that all the time. And something that helps me out sometimes is like, what does this song want to be?
Yeah.
And then have I made this the most effective thing it can be for this? It doesn't have to change the world.
Nope.
That's not up to me. But is this song effective for what it is? You know,
part of it, what's implied is that we're making songs. You guys are touring. You're constantly playing your songs live. How much of that is a factor in, like, is this doing what it should? Can I get this out on the road and enjoy my time in front of an audience with it? Like, the Pedro record, Winners Never Quit, yielded only three songs that worked live for my, in my opinion. And so then it made me want to make the next record, Control, in such a way that all of those songs were really ready for playing live. And that wasn't so much about people's response as just what my criteria, you know, when I made Winners Never Quit, we had 18 songs to choose from to play in our live shows. And I desperately wanted eight more songs that we could add to that list. You know, new bands have, you know, not even a whole entire set's worth of music in some cases. And so that criteria of like, is this working? How much does that come in for you? Like, do you write songs that you love in the writing process, you love on the record, but that just don't work live? And is that
All the time.
And how, and do you consider those failures in a way, or is there a place that you have for those songs? You know what I mean?
No, it's not a failure.
Right.
I mean, it's just the song.
I'm so negative.
No. I mean, if I had thought, man, this is going to kill, and then it's like the least, gets the least streams on Spotify, like people like start going to buy merch when we play it, like then it's sort of,
right.
Then I'm like, you know, well, I guess it's not as ripping as I thought it was.
Right.
Keep going, I guess. Like, but then for every song like that, there's always one or two like, oh man, that one really like kind of worked. That you might not really be expecting.
Yeah. One thing that this brings to mind is I'm in this band, Low Tom, and I had an idea for a song on what is the second Low Tom record. I thought of this idea, which was really novel and funny and exciting to me, and also kind of tense and weird, which is kind of my favorite. And, my impulse was to share it with my wife, just because there was a part of me that is so desperate for approval or connection or whatever, that as soon as I have something, an idea to exploit for that dopamine bump or that little bump of whatever you get when you're like, hey, isn't this a cool idea? And somebody looks at you and goes, yeah, that's really cool. There's a little bump that one gets. I definitely do. And so I was sitting there, I had this idea, and I started to tell my wife about it. And then the voice just said, why don't you just wait to see what we think of it first? Like, don't, if you share it and get that bump, then the process is tainted. It's almost like, it's not almost, it's like, here's a half finished idea. I want to get paid for this now. You know, and yeah, the payment is dopamine, but it's, but just sitting with it longer. And so that's what I did. I kept my mouth shut and I worked on it in my head, and it wound up being so much better for the idea and the song and for myself and my process. And more than anything, for that internal, it was like, I don't have to sell myself out every time I get an idea to get that bump. I can just sort of sit on it and wait and get that bump for myself later. But those moments that are the best is when I make something, I like it, people don't like it, but I just think either they're lying or they suck, or I don't know, like we just have different tastes. Like, I love this and it doesn't make any difference that other people think it's dumb or whatever. And that's I've only been in that spot a few times, but that's what I'm ultimately going for, I think, is just that feeling of like, I like this. And then when people do or don't, it's just like, whatever, you know.
I learned that lesson like pretty quick early on, you know, like we're talking about what you can control. Well, what you can't.
I think that's it too, is just knowing, it's kind of that question of how good could this song be and how much satisfaction could I get out of it if I wasn't hamstrung by all this other nonsense, by all these things that I can't control, or all this insecurity or whatever. My favorite things that I've ever made come from such a place of naivety that I find myself trying to get back to that, and just being like, oh, I haven't zoomed out and seen how this might appear from a market perspective or other people's viewpoints. Usually in a past record process, I would feel self-conscious and think, oh, I must zoom out and see how this might land. But like with the last record I made, I just thought, I don't even have time to do that. I'm just going to stay zoomed in, not worry about any of that, not worry about the bird's eye view of this thing, just zoom, stay zoomed in and stick with it. And that's a way to kind of get there for me, is just to not ever zoom out.
I never take the zoom out. Like I'm always, like all my problems are here. Like that's, I got enough to deal with here.
It's such a waste.
I'll have my melody. Mm-hmm. I'll have my phrasing. I'll have my music. I'll have a pretty good idea. I might not have a bridge section yet, but that's whatever. Yep.
That comes.
That's whatever. The middle eight, let the throwaway part of the song that gets you back. Don't bore us. Get to the chorus section. Like,
that's I love the bridges. Why? Your bridges are great. Kidding. Do you not? Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. Like it's the most important part of the song, really. It's like for me, what I like to do is like your verses are kind of like, they're sort of like scene setting things. Your choruses are kind of like an artful way to say what the bridge just says.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it hints at it. Yeah.
That's basically my songs in a nutshell. It's like every song. I'll be trying to fill in the actual, have like my scat vocal track.
Yeah.
I'll have my melody and phrasing, like of what I want to do in my head over the chords, and I'll be like slowly starting to fill in like lyrics. Okay, like what's a word for here?
Yeah.
You know, I might have my theme that I want to talk about.
Right.
Which most of the time is really just sort of like it's a placeholder theme until I'm done.
Yes. Until you find out where the exploration really leads.
Yeah. That is the trickiest. That's one of the trickiest things I've discovered in my entire, I guess I could call it a career now, but like here's my direction. Here's my goal. This is interesting to me. This is like, it might be the inspiration kernel for it. But when I start working, it's like I can't get there. I don't know what it is. Like it maybe, and I hold on to that. I might hold on to that a little bit too long, because if I were able to let that go, I could see where my journey's actually taking me and embrace that. But my cool idea.
Yeah.
This is a good idea.
I know what you mean.
And I was thinking when you started talking about that before, you know, like about having hesitance about fully exploring something. You know, maybe you could break it down to a point of willingness that you do have. Like, I don't want to go all the way here.
Right.
Because I don't want to spell this out exactly, but what's really behind saying this in the first place?
Yeah.
And is there a place I feel comfortable going there?
Yeah, I'm not trying to get all Mad Max about everything and just not care. Be kind of reckless with, like, I mean, there's a way in which I feel like you can see like Kozlik kind of, you know, has been embracing that, just like write what is inside on the last few Sun Kill Moon records. And there's times where for my taste, he steps over the line in ways that are like, I don't want to do that. But at the same time, there's everything up to that point is so revelatory because there's this honesty and this freedom there.
Right.
Even being honest about
then when you get into Randy Newman territory and you're just then it's like and
those
then
two.
It was hot and the Terminator was on USA.
You know, there is a brutal way to say everything, and you don't necessarily want to be brutal often or even all the time or even often in songwriting, unless that's your thing, unless you're Steve Albini or something.
I was just about to say pray to God.
Yeah, and then it's about the brutality.
Yeah.
But you know, but that's not my personality, and that's not, you know, I guess that, yeah, I do agree that that sometimes the feelings that come along with whatever theme you're exploring are so painful for people or so uncomfortable that keeps us from wading into it. And it's not a matter of, I don't want to say this in my song. It's like, I don't even want to face this as a person. Like with Phoenix, you know, I'm going through and cataloging all of these memories, some very painful, others, you know, just sort of, you know, autobiographical moments, and then skimming through them, having processed those things individually, wondering, can any of these land in a song in a way that I like? And then finding those ones that like, okay, this turned into a lyrical and melodic hook. But I don't, you know, I wasn't sure in every case if the memories that I hoped were going to be on the record or that I hoped would find a way on there were ever going to work. The biggest one for me was saved at the till the end, this scene from fifth grade in the lunchroom, this whole thing. And I didn't think it was going to make the record, even though it was like a foundational notion of why I was doing this work. And then in the end, it did. I had given up in a way or let go of needing to put it on there because I didn't want to force anything because there's such important things to me that I didn't want to like exploit them. I wanted them to show up the right in a way that would work, you know. Letting go of the fear of even feeling them is usually what I need to do. And then it either makes it on the record or it doesn't. And then I wind up being okay with that too. But just figuring out a way, like you said, to maybe there's a theme that's too on the nose or it's just too painful. And so you find a way to reference it without dragging yourself and everybody through something.
Yeah. Or maybe what does end up on the song is just a reference to like a lyric has some line, some reference to a feeling too painful. And then that's all you say about it.
Yeah.
It's like,
people know.
Yeah. You'll know, you know, yeah. Like, but you don't necessarily give anything away and you don't have to step on anyone's feelings. Yeah. You know, that the concept behind those Pedro records that Phoenix and what you're working on is sort of like investigative journaling.
Yeah, that's funny.
You know, like
it is. Yeah.
Like, but it's sort of it's kind of like what I do, like musically, I try to provide myself an environment to be creative. And usually that's like I'll mess around with a drum beat and then see what I can do. See if I can come up with something that I can contribute to. Because like if you're looking at just a blank page, like nothing's going to happen. So like what kind of prompt can I give myself like musically, or, you know, grabbing some random effect pedal and turning the knobs randomly and seeing what kind of sounds are made. You give yourself a foundational thing to explore there. And I think the idea behind Phoenix and, what you're working on Havasu now? Is that next? Like the
Havasu, yeah.
Didn't I get with you in Havasu? Is that gonna be the one of the songs?
I don't know. I don't know that.
Spring break capital of the world, Havasu. But oh God.
It's no, but, quite so, like, a place.
You give yourself you literally give yourself an environment to explore.
Yeah. And you know, I didn't know about this before, but I was just talking to somebody else and on a podcast, and they mentioned that David Lynch has this idea of this main idea, like, you know, Phoenix or an environment or a theme or whatever is like a magnet. And then it collects all these other ideas that pertain to it. And you can kind of, you know, use them however you will from that. But that this, you know, you're looking for an idea that is a strong enough magnet where you can collect a bunch of other things, Phoenix being one, and you know, really trying in my way, based on my experience, to use the place and the feeling of the town and my experience with it as a sonic, a way to make sonic decisions. And now I'm going to Havasu, and it's a desert place like Phoenix, but it's so different. Phoenix is populated and there's a lot of things going on. There are wilderness nearby, but Havasu, you're like right on the edge of the wilderness. And how does that affect the instrumentation? And can you make a place, a record feel like a place? Yeah, I've never worked with a magnet like these. And I think I probably always will now. Not something so autobiographical or specific, but just finding
an immersive experience that you can an immersive environment to be creative, not something beyond just like, you know, and listening to the drum loop and seeing what happens.
Yeah, I wanted to immerse myself in something that I could get lost in, and so that I wouldn't be self-conscious in a way. I would just shoot for this impossible, very subjective, super personal exploration, and then come out with whatever it was, to just be engaged in the work in a way that, you know, my nondescript home recording situation, you know, it's the same thing as everybody else. You got a 57 and you got an interface, and you can make magic that way if you find the right hook for yourself, the right inspiration. It's just looking for that, you know. I want to make art when I grow up, you know. I'm practicing.
Yeah. I know, like when I can't wait till I grow up and I can like make art.
Be a real goddamn artist.
I know. How much does production play a role in the writing? I mean, because for me, it's kind of like one and the same. Like something like a production choice creates inspiration that dictates theme choices.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, you know, and like how, when I'm steering the production and I'm steering like the lyrics, it kind of happens at the same time, you know, like
I agree that it works that way for me. You know, I do want to start writing with the tools that I'm going to use for the production if I can. But the problem is I don't always know that even that part can be somewhat of an exploration, because I don't have like a set thing that I'm coming back to. I want one, but I haven't landed on it. And so sometimes I'll, like with the record Care, I was demoing all that on acoustic guitar, all the four or five songs that I had.
Really? Because there's pretty much no guitars on Care, right?
There's none. Yeah. It's, and the song Care in particular was one of the first ones. And I have endless demos of that one, figuring out how to make it work with basically the same chord progression over and over again and an acoustic guitar arrangement. And my hope was that if I got the demo in my voice memos in a way that I enjoyed, then the song would be kind of ready. Yeah, that with that one in particular, I was going to go down to Swift's and bang out a pretty quick acoustic record. And as I was continuing to demo the rest of the songs, it just was unsatisfying to me, the way that it was coming off. And I thought, okay, well, my criteria is that I want to do it quickly. And what is another tool set that I know well enough to quickly put together something that captures what I'm feeling? And it wound up being, you know, plugins.
Is there like an internal governor that you have for like how much production is like going to kill something? Or is it really just a case by case? I mean, do you have a philosophy about that?
Yeah, production-wise, like how much is too much? That's a good question. I don't know. Usually when I think something's done, my co-creators are like, cool, it just needs one other main thing. And so like when I was working with Yuki Matthews on Care, or not Care, on Blanco and the Bazan Monthly stuff that came before that, I would come up with a structure that was like drums, a bass thing, a high thing, and a vocal, and feel like this is the structure, the skeleton of the tune. And then I'd send it to Yuki, and he would, in almost every case, feel like this is great. And then he would put like one other layer of like a lot of, like, you know, it would be the equivalent of like your lead guitar player being like, okay, now I'm going to just fill in all these little things. But in the case of Yuki, it was maybe another synthesizer voice, or taking bits of what I had put down there and resampling them and creating a line that is either on top of the thing or that weaves its way through the thing in a way that gives it more than just the skeletal. You know, I'm coming up with skeletons that I like, and then it's done and I'm standing there looking at it thinking like, that skeleton looks awesome. And then usually collaborators will be like, why don't we put some skin and some muscle on this thing? And I was like, cool, I'm into skeletons, but
yeah,
skin's cool too, you know?
Well, I mean, that's kind of why you choose to work with other people, so.
Yes.
You know?
Indeed. more and more I'm realizing, like we've been talking about, you make the music for yourself. And if I can't listen to the records later, and I know movies are different and other works are different, but for me, music, if I can't listen to it and enjoy it later, I've done a poor job, straight up. And so part of that is just getting used to that and realizing, like, it's not shitty to sit and listen to your records. It's not something that I should be embarrassed about, but it helps me make better records the more that I listen to the ones that I've made. And
yeah, if you don't feel the need to hit play one more time on when you're driving around with something you just did, even though it's been 3 hours and that's all you've been doing, then you're just not there yet.
I love that, because when it's there, it's just like, I can't stop listening to this song.
Like, it's like, oh, that's so cool. I can't believe I just did this. It's like,
yeah,
you get to, you're not wearing the creator hat. You're not wearing the editor hat. You're wearing the listener hat.
Yeah.
And it's just like, and that's, I mean, there's enough of those experiences to carry you through even the most trying of like battles to solve the puzzle.
Just enjoy yourself and know you're going to hit some things like that. And then some other things that aren't bad, but
right. There's like, it's such a, like, that's a problem for me. Like those moments are such a big rush that I can't let something suck.
Right.
And I need to just let stuff suck. Cause yeah. I can always like make it not suck later. It's like, I'm alone. No yeah. one's around. I mean, like, it's my choice if I show anybody it, like, this sucky thing. And then always, like, you can cannibalize the sucky thing later into something better if you have a different perspective. Like, that happens all the time. We've had stuff that became singles on other records based on stuff we threw away on earlier records. That happens all the time.
Yeah. I had a song called Good Citizen that was fine, but it didn't pass muster ultimately. And then, but there was something I really liked about it, and I took it and I turned it into this Bazan song called Hard to Be, which is one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was able to, take something that was like, okay, and turn it into something that for me was really helpful and has been kind of a mainstay. I hope that people are doing that with their stuff. I mean, I hope that people are free enough with themselves that they can just be like, yeah, this was okay, but I'm going to take it and use it over here. And, you know, the funny thing is I think you could put out both tunes and people wouldn't really pick up that it was the same thing, because the ornaments are so different on top of things. And when I think it's obvious, like, oh, this little melodic interval, that's like an Elliott Smith song. And people are just going to call bullshit. You play it, and it's just like, yeah, well, it is technically the exact same interval in a way that evokes that to me, but it literally doesn't evoke that to anybody else. And it doesn't matter. It's not stealing. It's just this common language that we all have and being willing to.
Yeah, because like chances are Elliott Smith took that from something that was an influence on him.
Yeah, the Beatles. Yeah.
You know, like... It's just part of music. It's like, you know, theme and variation, and the variation part's yours.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And you know, that's just going to be how it is.
And it's an oral tradition of theme and variation. And you know, Bob Dylan gets shit for it every few years when he puts out a record, and it's just like, hey, you're stealing. These are like direct ripoff lyrics. And he's like, it's not a ripoff. It's a reference. Like, this is what this art form is about, is, you know, making references. And so I've started to be easier on myself with that, where I'll just lift a bit of a lyric straight up and put it into, I've done it the last two things, lifted a Neil Young lyric and twisted it up. And then on Phoenix, there's a song called My Phoenix, and I do it with a William Blake little, it's not a lyric, I guess it's like a little bit of a poem. And then also Randy Newman, I kind of quote a song of his called God's Song. And those are my favorite moments of the tune. And 90% of people don't have any idea what they're from. And that maybe is the bigger shame in it, that I want people to see, like, this is all connected and just be free. Like, these are,
yeah,
you know.
Well, I mean, how much music is out there now? You know, it's like the chances that someone's going to live in exactly the same niche as you, and those exact same moments are going to stick out as like defining, it's pretty low. Yeah,
pretty low. Pretty low.
So I guess we should probably just go back and just rip off as much as we can to make records, because it doesn't matter.
Well, and I guess that's the thing, is that you start with something that is a reference or a ripoff, or, you know, you take a riff or a lyric or a little moment of a tune, and then you're like, I want to take something from this and use it as a launch pad. And 9 times out of 10, the thing is totally unrecognizable. Once you start with that jumping off point, like, there's so many Deer Hoof songs that I've been messing with and thought, oh, this is such a neat way of doing harmony. And then suddenly I'm in this other headspace, and then I make something that is, you know, in a way a direct ripoff. But it's unrecognizable to anybody that's where it was coming from. And I just think that,
I think that's sort of a common exercise for writers. Like, right. Take the first paragraph of Great Expectations and copy it verbatim, and then after that, see where it goes. Or whatever, you know.
And like, it feels kind of scandalous for songwriters to do that for some reason. Or if to me it did, I was self-conscious about it.
start playing Smoke on the Water for 5 minutes. And then just let yourself zone out and see where it goes.
Yes.
You know, like,
yes. Start writing a melody over that riff.
Yeah. Go record your own alternate melody and lyrics to Smoke on the Water. See, well, I mean, why not? Like, you don't have to. Yes. I mean, maybe.
So let's unpack that. What would be, so that makes some of us feel extremely self-conscious, like, what would be the point of that? But there's nothing the matter with doing that, with just taking a song from classic rock and writing your own song over the top of it. You might, like, if you're going to go out and make a bunch of money doing that, then you run into like a Bittersweet Symphony kind of situation.
There's issues, you know, people are uptight about it.
You know, but at that point, then the Rolling Stones just get half of the royalties, or in the case of Bittersweet Symphony, or what is that band?
Coldplay and Kraftwerk.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, you just sort of like, that one too.
Okay, well then, you know, you credit them as songwriters, you know, credit their publisher as give them publishing, credit them as songwriters, and like, next song.
That is an amazing way to... It just makes me think, like, why don't more people do that? It's just such a wonderful thing. I'm not the hugest Coldplay fan, but when I heard that song, I zoomed way in, because I was like, this is a Kraftwerk song. That's Chris Martin singing over it. And I'm confused. So maybe, I'm interested.
Yeah. Maybe they should have just taken it all the way and see if Kraftwerk would like actually guest on it, you know, like.
That would be funny.
I've done that sort of before with songs, like, I'm thinking, but maybe not so blatantly. I'll be like there's a song on Futures called Work, and this sounds sort of, I mean, I don't know what it is about this, but it reminds me of like a Liz Phair song, like maybe divorce song, but I couldn't place it. And then I just thought, wonder what Liz Phair is doing, if she'd come sing on this, you know, like, kind of sounds like a Liz Phair song to me. What's she doing? Yeah. And she was into it, and came down and sang, and like, you know, it's just another
ripping.
It's just another thing to like explore, I guess. Yeah,
and celebrate.
Yeah, it's just sort of like the ultimate barrier is just self-judgment.
Yep.
You know, it's like that stops me cold. Even, and I know I'm alone. I know that no one's looking over my shoulder, and I can throw it away if I want. But
well,
like,
and the question is what is coming up in one's head is like, what does this reveal about me? Does this reveal something that I'm trying to keep hidden, or is this something? Usually, it's something that you're feeling shame about. And what you're saying is true. You're in your own private space, you're recording yourself, and just to play something back can be so, can just get your shame chemistry just like fully engaged.
I don't even get to the stage where I play it back. I look at the thing and I'm stuck with what I'm going to say next, which word I'm going to write down next.
Yes.
I don't even get to that point where I hear, if I got past that and actually like did something, my new thing that I'm trying is to just write more and let it suck. Like,
yep, let it suck.
I have a song I'm stuck on right now. I have a great melody that I'm super stoked on. I have music that I think could be on a record tomorrow, but like, it's just all about the actual lyrics for it. And I have a good theme that I like that I'm exploring that I might be giving up on.
Do you write verse after verse sometimes? Like,
that's what I was about to say. Like, how fast can I get to the editor hat versus the creator hat? Because then the pressure's off. I'm just refining. You know, it's not.
Well, I really like that write drunk, edit sober adage, and not like literally drunk, but irresponsible. You know, like have a phase of the writing where there is no judgment. And that's hard to get to, but I feel like that you can. That's the gathering kind of phase that you were talking about at the beginning, in a way where they're just like, yeah. And in that phase, I think more and more I'm realizing, even just from this conversation, that phase can include other people's lyrics, other poetry, other bits from books and things, because you're really just trying to like capture a feeling that
you're saying, here's the magnet. Whatever sucks in is okay.
It's okay.
Because like you don't have to put your name on that now.
Because your editor is going to get it later, you know, and know what to do with it and make choices that you're okay with. But in the meantime, you can just sort of be the simple animal that you are and not judge yourself.
Man, myth, and legend, David Bazan.
I think we played at Kane's with Bazan.
Actually, if you're not familiar with David Bazan, I can't recommend enough going to pick up one of his records. He's an amazing musician, writer. You know, I listen to Pedro the Lion records a lot. I hope you guys stay safe, stay healthy, stay sane, stay productive, and stay looking for the opportunities. Because if you're willing to see them, they're there.